Thanks.
Thank you. If everyone can leave quietly, please, we have 9 more public hearings. Our next public hearing is ordinance related. Folks, please quiet. It's ordinance number 18-1, townhouse and multifamily dwelling outside wall dimensions. Ms. Corwell?
Thank you. This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-188 relating to townhouses and multifamily dwelling outside wall dimensions. The intent of this is what we're looking to do is right now the maximum length of a multifamily building is 165 feet. We've had some unique calculations done in the past to address that situation, and we've talked to some engineers, and we would like to change that to 170 feet to address some of the issues we've been seeing going on.
And Mr. Chairman, Commission, with each of these, because I think my discussions with the chairman earlier today is we will be handling each one of these individually with separate hearings for each one, more so that we're not doing air traffic control with different things coming up and so on and so forth. But staff, after these ordinances were introduced at council, we dissected these a little further, and with some of them we do have some suggested changes. I think it'd probably be best to bring those up first because I see some folks here, including an attorney, who may be interested in this or may not, and that may change some of their comments and eliminate some redundancy. So for this 18-1, there were two proposed changes. If you're looking at it, we are looking at Section 115-188D6 is one of the areas that would be addressed. And what is proposed for it to read instead of what you have before you would be an amendment to read, unless otherwise restricted by district regulations, not more than 8 dwelling units shall be included in any one townhouse building. That part doesn't really change, but the rest does. It says, and the outside wall dimensions of the townhouse building shall not exceed 170 feet in width, measured lineally from the outer edge of the townhouse building end units. We were looking at it, and the way it was written initially may not have been as clear from a measurement perspective. This would allow you to say, you go from your end units, how far are you, and you measure linearly from that. So we thought that was a clarification that would help. Likewise, if you look at Section 115-188E1, we would be revising, changing the last sentence to read, mixed-use buildings that contain non-residential uses shall not be subject to the outside wall dimension requirement. It was more of a wordsmithing there, again, to make that a little clearer. So wanted to bring that to the Commission's attention before we really get into the meat of this.
Okay. And just for clarification, that second one for the multifamily is we've had several mixed-use buildings try to come through, and right now they have to comply with the 165 feet. So while you might have commercial on the first floor, the maximum length of your building, because as residential associated with it, is 165 feet, unlike a normal commercial building where there is no maximum length.
And as an example of that, we had one that came before the board back in September, and that was a mixed-use facility. There was commercial buildings nearby, is near the outlets, and they were proposing to essentially be longer, and they had some unique designs to it. But if you looked across the street, those outlets are much, much longer. And even though these buildings were going to be commercial on the first floor of residential above, because they are residential, they needed to meet the 165 requirement. So this would take away that requirement from those types of buildings.
Sounds like it makes sense. Any questions, Mr. Wheatley? Any questions?
Just a procedural question that might help us a little bit. Mr. Ross, if you're amenable to this and if it's legal, would it be appropriate for us to vote on these as we close the public hearing?
Yeah, we'll get the public comment, and then we'll vote on each one as we go through, and then
I have no comments. I'm fine with the ordinance as it's been proposed with the amendments that Mr. Sharp read into
Mr.
the
Hudson?
Record.
Question. Mr. Hoffman?
Comments.
Ms. Hovey?
Well, I don't know if we have anybody here that wishes
we're
going to
find out.
About,
so. Is anyone here that would like to comment on this proposed ordinance change, 18-1? no comments on this. We'll close the public hearing. And then, since we've closed the public hearing, do you have a motion drafted, Mr. Sharp?
I can
just need to say
one.
I make a motion that we accept the ordinance 18-1 as amended, as presented with amendments.
Or with staff recommendation?
Yeah, we could say this. I move, Mr. Chairman, move to approve ordinance 18-1 as amended with the following change to section 115-188D6 to read, unless otherwise restricted by district regulations, not more than 8 dwelling units shall be included in any one townhouse building, and the outside wall dimensions of the townhouse building shall not exceed 170 feet in width, measured lineally from the outer edge of the townhouse building end units. And the last sentence of section 115-188E1 would now read, mixed-use buildings that contain non-residential uses shall not be subject to the outside wall dimension requirement.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and second to recommend approval of ordinance 18-1 townhouse and multifamily dwelling outside wall dimensions with the recommended amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next ordinance to consider is ordinance number 18-2, yards and open spaces administrative variances.
This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-181 relating to yards and open space generally. What this is intended to do is add a section of code that gives, that we've noticed that we've had a lot of building permits or certificates of occupancy that maybe have been issued in error, and unfortunately, the staff cannot address those. They actually have to pay the $400, or sometimes we waive that, but they have to go through the public hearing process. It'll take several months to get them through because they have to go to the Board of Adjustment to obtain a variance for those. So if what we'd like to do is, if we can prove that a CO was issued in error or a building permit was issued in error, that staff could then approve an administrative variance to allow for that change, to recognize that something was done in error. That it was not the applicant's fault that something happened.
What's an example of one that comes to mind?
We've had issues where, say, the setback, they gave the wrong corner front yard setback, so a house was built in the wrong location, or a shed was built in the wrong location because they didn't realize it was a corner front, so it had, instead of, 15 feet, it was, 30 feet, and so things are placed in the wrong locations.
And another example, and we see these at the Board of Adjustment level a lot, or more frequency than I think we would like, where, now we've gotten more specific with our measurements, where you can, our surveying techniques are so much better than they used to be in the past. Whereas if you had a survey done maybe 20 years ago, it wasn't as accurate, or more importantly, maybe the inspector went out and measured with tape, and it was not as accurate. And right now, our code allows for the director to do an administrative variance if it's up to a foot. But we see times where it's a foot and a half, or things like that, and there have been a CO issued. And this would give the director some discretion. It does say may in there, so that gives a little more discretion to it. One of the things that there was a change that we did discover, when you look at it, it says in addition to the process to start that. That would indicate that it would be part of sections 1-6. I think what we were looking at is it's actually separate and independent from that. So what we would propose is to strike in addition to and use the term notwithstanding. So in other words, this is if it is more than a foot, the director has some discretion. Again, it says may administratively grant it, so sure. Not an absolute requirement.
Any questions, Mr. Wheatley?
I'm good.
Mr. Hudson?
No.
Mr. Hopkins?
No.
Mrs. Hoey Stevens? Okay. Anyone from the public like to comment on this particular ordinance 18-2? Mr. Reaver? Thank you, Paul.
Paul Rager, 18171 Deer Forest Road, Georgetown. Basically, with this amendment, from watching the Board of Adjustment for the last year with all the people coming in to do it, it's about time that the people should not be charged for a mistake that was done in error by the county. or a prior thing coming in for the closings. This one was much needed, should have been done a lot quicker, but it's appreciated that this one got pushed through for the residents.
Thank you, Paul. Anyone else? Seeing no one rise, we're going to close the public hearing on ordinance 18-2. Mr. Sharp, you have a motion you want to read in?
Sure. A motion to approve ordinance, or recommend approval of ordinance number 18-2, an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Sussex County Code by amending Article 25, Section 115-181 relating to yards and open spaces generally, with the amendment that the first words of subsection 7, we remove the words "in addition to" and replace with "notwithstanding."
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and second to recommend approval of ordinance 18-2, yards and open space administrative variances, with the recommended amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next ordinance to consider is ordinance 18-3, lapse of special exemption or variance.
This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 27, Section 115-213, relating to lapses of special exceptions and variances. Right now, there's a one-year time frame for the once an application is granted by the Board of Adjustment. What we'd like to do is extend that to 2 years. We've had several instances in which a variance was granted and then the property owners ran into difficulties trying to get their building permit. So technically, if you've not pulled your permit and are under construction with a one-year time frame, then you have to come back through. And then this would clarify that that ability and give the board a little bit of it just helps the public a little bit more, being able to get underway with applications.
We also note that we do see these from time to time, and this provision has always been kind of oddly worded as well, so this was a way to clarify it. We do have a couple of proposed edits to it. First, if you were to look on the fourth line where it says in the middle of it, or variance was granted, there would be a period after that and elimination of or, and then we would strike the remaining part, and it would read, the Board of Adjustment may extend the expiration date of the special use exception or variance for a period not to exceed 1 year upon a showing of good cause, provided, however, that the extension request is submitted prior to the expiration of the existing approval. That would give the authority that you've got 2 years for your original approval. If at the end of those 2 years, for some reason, you have good cause, you wish to come up and do ask for an additional time, you have to do it before that approval expires. So.
And that would be up to the owner to know when the expiration date is?
Yes. And that's currently how it is now, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Wheatley.
No questions. I believe Mr. Hutt is.
I know. He'll be up here in a second. Mr. Hudson?
No questions.
Mr. Hutt?
No questions.
Okay. Mr. Hutt, you have something you want to?
Good evening. For the record, my name is David Hutt, a local attorney here in Georgetown. And I know this is specific to this ordinance, but in general, I would say all of these are much needed, and it's good to see them moving forward. With respect to this lapse of a variance or special use request or exception that has been granted, this is much needed as well. I've actually brought some of these extension requests to the Board of Adjustment. I know everybody knows, associates me, for better or for worse, with signs. But sometimes you can work your way through the board process, and DLDOT's given you permission. Now you have to have it before you file your application. But what you get only lasts for so long. And sometimes by the time you've gotten through the board process, appellate periods have expired, and you start to order the steel, the DLDOT portion has expired, then you have to go back to DLDOT, go through their process, and then we're back in front of the board and you sort of get whipsawed a little bit between various agencies. And a two-year time period would eliminate much of that. I know there's actually a hotel on Route 1 that just had to have a variance application for an extension of a variance application for the exact same reasons. There's a lot of agency approvals, as you know, that go into those things. So this is much needed. I would agree with Mr. Sharp. This is one of those things that I've asked him about, I think, previously in discussions about various applications. I would have referred to the language as probably clunky. And so I had actually prepared alternate language. I was just reading and heard the other language that was proposed. That sounded less clunky, for lack of a better term.
A good legal term there.
Than that. That's Latin. and so the only thing that that I had, and frankly, I put it together, I'll hand it out. In particular, the last part of the sentence in the existing ordinance was always a mystery to me as to how that should be read. And so you'll see when this gets handed out, and I made my version in color, so it would be fancier than the county's version.
You have more money for ink.
But the last sentence that is, and frankly, that sentence now no longer appears in the version that Mr. Sharp read.
They struck the same sentence that you did, yes.
And then the only thing that I added, you'll see, is I just made it clear that if a decision of the board is appealed, the appellate time period, or that the two-year time period or window wouldn't begin until the end of that appellate process. Frankly, I think that's the law, but I call Mr. Sharp when this happens, I think every time, and ask him, and so I figured I could save him a phone call. Not that I mind talking to Mr. Sharp, but we could save him a phone call and just indicate that when there's an appellate situation, that the 2 years begins at either the end of the Superior Court, or if it's appealed to the Supreme Court, at the end of the Supreme Court, when you have a non-appealable decision at that point. And so I would still suggest that that might be a good addition. I think the other additions did clarify some of the language, and those are the only comments I have on.
Well, one thing, Mr. Hutt, is we're just going to recommend this to council, so there'll be plenty of time to digest between now and then. And if we don't quite get it exactly the way you think it should be, you can take another swing at council, okay?
I suspect I'll be there as well.
Okay.
Mr. Hutt, I see you brought a junior associate with you this evening.
I did, as a new associate. Her name's Lily.
Welcome, Lily.
What's the word clunky mean?
It's de minimis clunkalorum est. It's Latin. Ask your dad. He'll explain it on the way home.
It's not a real word.
Anything else, Mr. Rock?
That's it.
Thank you.
Hey, if the president can do it, I can.
Spell it, please.
You just gave yourself a hell of a raise. Anyone else like to speak regarding this particular ordinance? Mr. Sharp, I'm going to close the public hearing, but then you can respond. We'll close the public hearing on this ordinance, and then Mr. Sharp. You heard the comments of Mr. Hutt. I don't know if you can incorporate
I did, and I've looked at what Mr. Hutt's proposed, and this was something that we had thought about as well. I would have no problem, I think it would make sense to put it in. It may give some clarity. It is the practice that we do anyhow, and I don't think it would hurt to put that in. So if the commission was so inclined, we could add that.
Anybody object to that?
Let's do it.
Okay, go ahead and read your motion.
Let's do it. All right. This is a motion to recommend approval of an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 27, Section 115-213, relating to lapses of special uses, special exceptions, and variances. And we would move to amend as part of that. That on the fourth line after the word granted, there would be inserted a period. The remainder of that sentence would be deleted and replaced with the Board of Adjustment may extend the expiration date of the special use exception or variance for a period not to exceed 1 year upon a showing of good cause, provided, however, that the extension request is submitted prior to the expiration of the existing approval. And we would also add the following sentence after that. If a decision of the board is appealed, the 2 years shall not begin until the decision on appeal becomes final.
So moved.
We have a motion and a second to recommend approval of ordinance 18-3, lapse of special exemption or variance with the recommended amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next ordinance to discuss is ordinance number 18-4, Kim Hoey Stevenson ordinance.
I believe it's called interconnectivity, but she might be very interested. This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 28, Section 115-220 and 115-221 relating to interconnectivity required for certain uses. So the intent is to require interconnectivity for new commercial uses. There is ability for the Planning Commission to waive that requirement if it is not feasible in certain instances.
And come on, Kim.
I have to say I'm glad the county's starting to catch up with me. No, I'm just kidding. But you want me to go first?
Sure.
Because I think this is wonderful. I'm glad we're doing this. I would like to say that I'd like to see a little bit more that, because this is all commercial, but I would also like to see it pertain to residential developments of, say, 100 units or more that have an empty lot next to them so that there would be some interconnectivity set up ahead of time.
For the adjacent parcels?
Undeveloped? If it's undeveloped or if, I put my development in, I've got interconnectivity, and then the next guy comes up and he goes, well, that lot's not empty, I don't need to connect to it. But, that if there's interconnectivity already set up or an empty parcel, that be added to it. And the way we would do that, I would believe, would be that we would have to add sentences at the end of section 115-220B16 that states any residential use identified in section 115-219A1 or 2 with 100 or more units must provide for interconnectivity with adjacent undeveloped parcels. Do we need to put something in there that if there's interconnectivity available, they need to connect to that? Or, are we creating a loophole that somebody will say, well, we don't have to have interconnectivity because it's already, this other lot's already developed, even though they put interconnectivity?
That they say that one's developed and like the other one actually has to match and connect all the way through? Is that what you're trying to make sure?
What I'm saying is, we've got a big empty field and a piece of it gets developed. Well, they've got to provide, I would say, at least one extra way to connect to the rest of the blank property. But then as the rest of the property gets developed, I don't want there to be a loophole where they say, well, this says I only have to be interconnected to undeveloped properties. That property is already developed. I don't have to connect to it.
Well, I mean, on the site plan, if we can garner the votes for your idea.
I understand that the site plan is, I might be whistling in the dark here.
It would already be stipulated on that originally developed parcel that's what that was for. And it would be mandated that if it got done, it would have to be used there. That could be, done, on the site, final site plan approval. I have personal hesitancy because we've been here where, the people in these different developments just don't like interconnectivity between residential developments.
Well, I agree with you, sir, but these people also come in here in these different developments not wanting anybody else to move to Sussex County.
That's true.
Well, there's a difference between that and not wanting to drive through your neighborhood.
I think if we've given them a heads up ahead of time, when you're developing, you just develop it so it's not a straight through highway. I mean, I've gone into, the interconnectivity. I've gone into developments where there was a connection to the other development, but I wasn't going to do it because I was going to have to drop breadcrumbs to be able to find my way out again. So,
right.
I just want them to be thinking ahead to make this a possibility.
I mean, there are reasonable concerns, and there's reasonable reasons to have it as well, but there's liability issues and maintenance issues and safety issues with people with children and more traffic going through. And so, it's always been a difficult discussion here at the commission level anyway. I don't know what council.
Well, I mean, that's why we make these big dollars, that we can
tough
make
decisions.
These have these.
Well, the council's going to decide, so.
And just for clarification, 219 references townhouses and multifamily.
Mm-hmm. It would be 219 and, let's see.
over time.
115-220B and 115-221B18, and it would be for two.
Right, so 219 actually states what is required to go through the site plan process, and it's not single-family, it is multifamily. So apartments, duplexes, it would also be for townhouses. Those would be the residential that you'd be picking up that would have over 100. So it would not be a single-family subdivision. It would be like a conditional use that's coming through that's multifamily.
A multi-family or something like
something maybe like other applications you've seen.
I don't want to put some kind of terrible requirement on, you know, a 20-unit, one-road development.
Well, I mean, in order to, I think we all understand what you're proposing. But without doing a formal motion, is it okay if we just poll the commission?
Get a consensus? I'm just not at a place where I'm ready to codify that for residential stuff yet. I think the commercial idea is something that commercial folks want almost universally. They want to be able to go from one parking lot to another without kind of going out on the highway. There's still a lot of controversy. And, you know, this gets into the road design thing again, because these people pay to maintain these streets if they're not built to state specs. You know, if they're not turned over to the state, they pay to maintain these streets, and they don't want that extra traffic because they won't want people using roads that they're not paying to use. You know, not paying the maintenance on, and it's a tough situation. But I get it, and whenever we can get somebody to do it or ask, you know, or get them to do it voluntarily, and we may come to a point where we can codify it, but I think it won't be until you can fix this road issue about who's going to pay for it.
All right, well, I will continue to beep the gong.
Well, so you might have three votes, Mr. Well,
you never know.
I was going to say, I'm only one. You got three more shots
okay,
here.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, man, if Wheatley doesn't come.
At this point, I'm not ready to do that, to go for that, because there are so many people against that kind of thing. And looking from where I come from, hear a lot of stuff that unwanted's come through your neighborhood. You know, the crime rate goes up, people go through there too fast, things like that. There are a bunch of issues that I don't completely go through.
Chocolates?
It's the boys against the girls.
Jesus, you guys.
Easy now.
Well, there's three opposed, so there's no need for me to get into the program. Yeah.
You don't want to argue with me, Mr. Ross?
No, not at all. I mean, it's... I think we all understand. I mean, it's certainly something that's desirable, but there are issues that surround it that are too complex. Let's cross the commercial bridge first and then see if we can get over the other bridge.
All right, visionaries are often not appreciated in their time.
No, you're much appreciated all the time.
So I would note, if we want to move forward with this, there are two little fixes that we'd want to reference. The symbol for the word section instead of the word section, and then refer to the complete section number instead of just A-5 and 6 in both 115-220 and 221.
Okay, Mr. Shaw, let's see. We do have to see if there's any public interest if we're done with our questions. Is there any, Mr. Hutt, do you have any comments on this particular one or anyone else? Come on, Mr. Hutt, you can come first.
Go ahead.
I'm going to pick a fight with my neighbor. So, I think the fight's over, so I'm not going to pick the fight.
Don't try to sell something that's already sold.
I'm not going to. I'm just going to reflect that there, in general, and I know there's a philosophical difference here, in general, connectivity makes all the sense in the world in commercial settings, and it's not as clear-cut in the residential side. For all the reasons that were said, in addition to GPS loves to find the most direct route as a crow flies and is going to start putting people through people's subdivisions that shouldn't be there. That there was some case people were talking about before, I think it's in New Jersey or something, where the neighborhood's having to change something because GPS routes everybody right through these connected neighborhoods because as the crow flies, it's the fastest route. GPS thinks it's figured out a new way to get somewhere, and it hasn't. So All I would say is that I agree with the consensus over here that the residential side of interconnectivity would need a different consideration.
Okay. Anyone else? Any comments on this particular ordinance? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing. And Let's see, Janelle, between you and Mr. Sharp, do you have a motion?
I can handle it, I think. Motion to recommend approval of ordinance number 18-4, an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 28, Section 115-220 and 115-221 relating to interconnectivity required for certain uses, with the following amendments: that wherever used in this ordinance, the word section is replaced with the section symbol, and wherever A5 and A6 are referenced, we will put the section 115-220 or 115-221 where appropriate.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to recommend approval of ordinance 18-4, interconnectivity, with the recommended amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. The next ordinance for discussion is ordinance number 18-5, condition amendments.
This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 28, Section 115-222, relating to amendments of prior approvals. This one is that right now, if there's a condition of approval for a conditional use or an RPC, that condition of approval, if it starts with the Planning Commission, can be amended by the Planning Commission. But if it comes from County Council, it actually has to go through the whole public hearing process. So instead of having two different ways to go through to amend a condition, it would to be any request to amend a condition of approval, no matter where it starts from, goes through back through the entire public hearing process.
Say that again. I'm sorry. This one confused the heck out of me.
Okay. So say you make a recommendation of approval for a conditional use. You make the recommendation, that a specific condition.
The
say
commission.
Hours of operation are from 8 to 5.
Okay, the commission does that.
Commission makes that.
Okay.
County Council adopts that hours of operation are 8 to 5.
Okay.
If somebody wants to come back and amend it, they can right now just come back before the Planning Commission without a public hearing and ask to amend it to go, we want to go from like 7 to 5. That's what the code says. However, say if County Council changed that commission to say, Planning Commission said 8 to 5, and County Council said 7 to 5, and then they want to come back and change that condition to 7 to 6, has to go back through the full public hearing process. So a public hearing before Planning Commission and County Council.
Okay. Now, but since it says, do you mind if I jump in?
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Since it says it affects RPCs, then if they come back in and say, we had two pools and now we only want one, but maybe they've already sold property or something, you know, that this is covered by this, that they would come to us and say, we want to change our amenities plan?
Well, if the condition of approval was, say, you have to have 4 tennis courts, 2 pools, and a clubhouse, and now they want to change the commission, that's like 4 tennis courts, 2 pickleball courts, and 1 swimming pool and a clubhouse, then it would have to go back through the public hearing process. But if you're not that specific and it just says the amenities, that there should be amenities of a clubhouse, a pool, and other items, then they typically don't ask to amend that condition, unless you get very specific saying 4 tennis courts, 2 pickleball courts.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because I'm thinking that if, because they say that we're providing this amenity package, and when they give us their site plan, they've got the amenity package in there. You can see, the whatever you said.
Yeah.
If they haven't sold a lot, I don't care. Change the amenity package. Mm-hmm. But if they have, then that affects people. Mm-hmm. So that one I would want to see a hearing for, no matter. Or a letter from, I've already sold one lot. Here's the letter from Bob I sold the lot to that says he's fine if we don't have 4 pickleball courts.
Right. And again, I think it's if the condition of approval just says amenities and you don't get into amenities, pickleball, bocce, horseshoe pits, and if it just says, I'm trying to think of what it is. It's a more generic term that would allow for the interchangeability to go from like a tennis court to a pickleball court in that condition, then it would not require public hearing.
But the way it stands now, if somebody comes in for a minor change of condition, we can grant that other business. Mm-hmm. But if we deem it not a minor change of condition, we can tell the applicant, look, we're not going to grant it. You're welcome to come back for the public hearing process. So they have an option at that point to either drop the request or come back for a public hearing process to get their wish. We've done that, not frequently, but it's happened. And what concerns me is that, you know, you have somebody that's going through great length to get an approval, and maybe for some reason out of their control or whatever, something has to be slightly modified. And then they have to go through the whole public hearing process again. That just seems burdensome. I mean, we have the authority to make them go through the public hearing process by simply denying the request. This would just simply deny the request up front. Everybody comes through, even for minor changes?
That is the intent of this ordinance.
My goodness. Well, that's pro-business, I guess. Do you have a thought?
Well, why are we, why?
This one did not originate from staff. This one was asked to come through.
Ah, here comes the truth now.
So
tell us the backstory.
I'm just saying this one did not originate from staff, so there was concerns, and the intent is to have this go through full public hearing.
Could I
amendment to conditions?
Do you know who it came through? I mean,
don't put it.
Just came from others.
No, I mean,
Kim can.
My understanding is that the others that put this through did it because they didn't want, say, the hours condition. You know, if Bob's got a truck repair business, when he came in and said, I want hours from 8 to 10, and we said, no, you can't have them from 8 to 10 because, you know, or 8 to 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. because you got neighbors. And it can only go till 5 because all the neighbors came in and complained and said, no, it's, you know, we've got little kids. After 5 o'clock, we need to have it. And we're like, okay, 8 to 5. Well, then Bob sells his business to Joe, and Joe comes in, you know, 10 years later and says, you know, I want to change my hours. Well, everybody that had come in before is not going to know that Joe just came in to change his hours to 10 p.m.
Everybody came in before is dead.
Not necessarily, but I mean,
I understand that. But my point is that things change all the way around. I get that.
They do change, but I mean, but you're not giving the neighbors the chance.
So apparently, someone's thinking we're being too lenient on changes of conditions of approval.
No, I don't believe that's the concern at all. I think there's a concern that they just want, people want a more open process to when conditions are being amended. And I think we've had that in the past with other applications where a request was made before the Planning Commission regarding a certain situation that I can think of off the top of my head, that the request was granted to allow a certain use to then occur, and the neighbors had concerns. And the neighbors didn't have any recourse because it was a condition that started with the Planning Commission.
Like maybe a landscaping business out in the rural area, shall we say.
I just think it sets us up for a whole lot of stuff. If every change of condition is going to have to require a public hearing, no matter how minor it is, I don't know, guys. I mean, it just seems burdensome to me.
And again, it would just be for RPCs and conditional uses. Subdivisions, still, again, the purview falls to the Planning Commission.
Well, I mean, we have a power.
Okay.
Right. I'm just making that clarification.
Understood. And let me ask you, is there a staff opinion on this? I mean,
there is no staff opinion on this one.
Smart woman. Yeah. We need to hire a dummy, I can tell you that. I don't know. I'm with Bob. I just think, you know, one shoe size doesn't fit all. I just think we're going to be dragging people in for just modest
how,
and
how can we
changes.
Fix it, though? Because, I mean, that's
well,
a valid point.
Well, I think, you know,
that,
one
yeah.
thing, I think it's valid, but I think, you know, one thing we can do to better the process is at least when a condition is an amended condition is requested, that a copy of the minutes that, you know, from the meeting be attached to our packets and stuff, so that we can at least read through the minutes and see whether that condition was proffered by the applicant, demanded by the public, and supplied by the commission or council. So we'd have some background. And I think, you know, sometimes we do view these in a bit of a vacuum, and having that background might help us to at least uncover whether there was a public objection or not, or public demand.
Right, and again, we do try to put that information, like the date of the public hearing, into the memo for other business, so you have that information. But if you want, we can start addressing.
At least reference the minutes, even if we don't run them off and copy them, so that we can go to the date, look at them.
Two other points, though, that I think that we need to remember, and Mr. Rieger spoke to one of them a minute ago. You know, if we require them to go back through a public hearing process, they have to pay for that.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, $400 to find out if you
500.
Can 500 bucks to stay if you can stay open a half hour later, you know. And we are backed up 6 to 8 months already. Can you imagine what this is going to do, what this will do to our agenda? This is just no. That's the answer to this one. No.
I believe you need to hold a public hearing and then
you can
make a motion and
let's let the well, anyone else on the commission, then we'll do that.
I'm out.
Okay.
Let's sit
down. The advantage of not being chairman, you can be as disruptive as you want to be.
I like, you know, my mother called me trouble all the way till the day she died, and so I understand disruptive. I'm it. Anyone have a comment from the public? Let's see. Mr. Rieger, you want to come first? Okay, Mr. Hutt's coming first. Okay.
I guess there's two important things I learned in law school that apply to this one. One is, if you're winning, sit down and shut up. So I'm about to sit down and shut up, because it doesn't sound like there's a lot of support for this here. The second thing that I would say that you always hope that you learn and remember in life is, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And I'm not sure what's broken here and exactly what is attempting to be fixed by this. I've always been a little perplexed by the language of this section. Frankly, I had prepared alternate language, but I am going to not submit it, with the hope that this does not make a recommendation from Planning Commission for approval.
Thank you, Mr. Hutt. Mr. Rieger?
Paul Rieger. This one I am completely opposite on, with the fees being waived. This one, I remember when it came through with certain things where the public coming in and the hours, a lot of the planning and zoning hearings, and then going to the county council. It seems like to what you're hearing here sometimes is different than what the county council hears at their hearing. And they're getting a different bunch of neighbors or people coming in and voicing their opinion that you may not necessarily hear. And if you put on 1 through 6, they put 7 through 9 for conditions. They're voting for 1 through 9. They should be taking over the assumption for 1 through 9.
They do.
As
they
if
do.
They wrote it.
They do.
So you had one, I believe a while ago, a hearing came through here, and actually was like, should have went to back up to county council.
It should. So conditions that originate here stay here. The originations that go to council, it does go to council.
We can't change what council does.
But here is what I say, is you may put 1 through 6, and it's like you're saying, assign the hours. If they agree that maybe you had the hours were fine and sufficient, but then 6 months later, the person comes back in and says, now I want to go from 7 to 9. Meanwhile, the same neighbor that came into the county council that would have objected to the 9 o'clock won't be there for your hearing, or vice versa. At least this way you can come back to the council member that's voted and elected to make the discretion on whether that business is going to get open, get the
if it's a council, if it's a requested change of condition by council, it goes through the public hearing process now. That's the current thing. It requires a public hearing, it comes here, and then goes to council.
But if every condition that's placed?
No, just the ones that are put on by council.
For the conditional uses.
Right.
Yes.
If the condition's put on by the commission, it can be brought to us under other business, and we have two options. We can approve the condition, that the change, or we can deny the change, and the applicant then has two options to either let it go and not get the change, or the applicant can request a public hearing and go through that process again.
Yeah, I think that however it works for the conditions, if it's put on the conditional and the county council approves it, comes up however they come through at 5032, anytime that there's an amendment with certain things. I mean, I'm not talking about minor stuff, but when you're talking hours or enlarging something here, or something that can be interpreted as there's a, it was put in a condition for a reason.
So
it should be punted back.
So basically, I apologize for cutting you off, Mr. Rieger. I'm guessing what you're saying is if council made a decision on it, regardless of where it originated, it's your opinion that it should go back to council if it's amended?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We're going to close the public hearing. And does someone have the motion?
Yeah, I move that we recommend denial of the ordinance.
Eighteen-five
condition amendments.
Second.
We have a motion and second to recommend denial of ordinance 18-5 condition amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next item is ordinance 18-6, deck and patio setbacks.
So this is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-183, relating to decks, porches, platforms, or steps inside and rear or setbacks or side and rear yards. Right now, a deck or unenclosed addition, no roof, can encroach 5 feet into the rear yard setback. What the staff is proposing is to allow them to go within 5 feet of the side or rear property line. Because right now, if you have a 30-foot rear yard setback, you can only go 5 feet into that rear yard setback. So you've got a lot of open space that you can't use. We also see a lot of Board of Adjustment applications requesting the extension and say it's like, you know, you can build by code a 5-foot deck in your backyard or but that's not really functional, so they need like a 6 or 7 foot deck, so they're asking for a variance to allow for something. We also note that this is the proposed amendment is similar to many other jurisdictions, and this is also very similar to the accessory building structure setbacks, is that a shed can be within 5 feet of a side or rear property line.
Makes sense.
Makes a lot of
sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any changes to this one, David?
No, there was no changes to it. I think Ms. Cornwell explained it sufficiently. I will only note that we do get a lot of applications before the board, and you know, particularly with things where there's decks or stairs that just need to go a little further. And right now, if we treat it as though you're allowed to project 5 feet, but if you have to go to 6 feet, you got to get a variance for the whole six. So this would eliminate, hopefully, a lot of that.
Okay. Any member of the public have it? Go ahead, Kim?
Say anything we can streamline and...
Any member of the public?
It'll make it easier where those boundary lines are.
Yeah, that makes sense. Any member of the public have a comment? Any member of the public? No. Any member of the commission have anything else? We're going to close the public hearing. Do we have a motion?
I do, Mr. Chairman. This is... Ordinance number 18-6, an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-183, relating to decks, porches, platforms, or steps inside and rear yards. Motion to recommend approval.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and second to recommend approval of Ordinance 18-6, deck and patio setbacks. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next public hearing is Ordinance 18-7, yards and open space ramps.
So this is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-181, relating to yards and open space generally. The intent of this is to allow for handicap ramps to encroach into the front yard setback. The only place right now they are allowed to encroach is in a manufactured home park. So if you want to install a temporary handicap ramp anywhere else, it has to comply with the principal structure setbacks. So we would like to amend this. Staff would note, upon looking at the manufactured homes section, we want to tweak this one a little bit more. We'd like, because right now they can encroach 4 feet. We've been discussing, staff's been discussing this section with the community development department, and they've been helping people build ramps as close as they can to the parking areas, which is definitely more than 4 feet. So we would like a little bit more time to get the right setback information.
And this language here, which is not for the manufactured home parks, largely mirrors that. What I would anticipate is that once we find out the specifics on this and maybe the best way to work it so that we're not creating more problems with new language, that there very well may be another ordinance that's at least proposed from a staff level that would mirror this with the manufactured home parks so that we would have kind of identical language with both. Right now there's been, and we do see at the board level occasionally where there's handicap ramps that come in where they need variances, and you know, a lot of times those do have to project further into side and rear yards, or side or front yards. So I think this is one where we might need to punt on, so to speak, for right now.
Can we defer it?
You absolutely could, but we, you know, certainly if there's anybody here who wishes to chime in on it, we'd like to hear what they got to say, too.
Was there some discussion about inspections of these?
There's no inspection by the planning office. We do not do inspections. I'm not sure on the building code side if they do inspections. I did get correspondence back from the community development side that, because there was a question about if they're temporary, do they ever get removed? And since they do help people build them, they do note that every once in a while, especially if they help build them in towns, they will send a letter to the town saying it's been removed. Because again, we do not follow up after it's been removed. We also note that we think this is going to become more and more prevalent and needed as we have an aging population in this county. So we want to make sure we're addressing everyone's needs.
So temporary is just that someday it'll go away?
Yeah, and again, right now, like if we've had people, it's like, okay, well, I need a handicap ramp to come in. And it's like, well, how can we redesign it to not encroach into setbacks? And the issue is, and those are the ones we know about, we rarely actually see the handicap ramps. They usually go get their building permit and they leave the building. But it's like some people can't come home without the ramp. Right. So we want to make sure we're not holding people up from getting home.
And there very well may be one of those things as part of this. We look at how we define some of these things as well. So there's some
nothing more than a sidewalk with a slope to it. Mr. Wheatley, have any questions? Mr. Hudson? Mr. Roberts? We'll see if the public has a comment. Mr. Hutton?
Some of the same concerns that have been referenced by Ms. Cornwell and Mr. Sharp, I had. The only other one that I think I would add to the list that they had, and that you were just starting to sort of discuss it a little bit, was the proposed ordinance talked about an affidavit from a doctor on an annual basis. And that sort of, to me, turns the county into ramp police or something like that, which seems a little strange. If there is going to be a process, I know there was, when this ordinance was introduced, I listened in on that at county council. There seemed to be great consternation on this issue. And to me, there's other sections in the code where a special use exception is only valid for 5 years. And maybe it's a process like that. My understanding of the county's process, having participated in it or had clients who are involved in it, is, for instance, if you have a manufactured home that's used for a commercial or business use, that special use exception is only good for 5 years. I don't know what the county's tickler system is, but I know I have clients who, I don't know, 6 months or something like that prior to the expiration of that 5-year period, get a letter from the county saying your special use exception is about to expire. You either need to reapply or remove the structure from the site. And I think the consternation at council was, how do we make sure that once there's no longer a need for this exception or to the setbacks and all that, that it actually disappears and doesn't become a permanent part of the structure. And so when the new crafting is being done, I guess this is just food for thought for whoever's crafting this in the future, that, you know, maybe it's a similar process, maybe it's 3 years or 5 years or whatever it is, but annual basis seems sort of burdensome.
I know that, like, for manufactured homes, we have a special use exception process where if you have a medical hardship, say you've got a family member who's, you know, having issues and they need to, and you have area where you can fit your manufactured home, you can come to the Board of Adjustment for a special use exception, and that's granted for a period of 2 years. And then after that, you get an annual renewal letter, and you just have to demonstrate that the individual still lives there who is the one who was needed for, and there's some you know, it becomes a lot less burdensome on the applicant because they're not having to come back. But we have had times where that manufactured home then, you know, it just sits there and what do we do? And in some cases, another family member is the one using it. So then they just reapply for a new one.
Can you put a sidewalk in the setback?
Well,
You can put a sidewalk.
I have a question for you. Are we like having a rampant problem with people building unneeded handicap ramps in Sussex County?
No, we've just had a few, especially a few come to the board lately that have encroached into setbacks.
Well, my point is this. If somebody needs a handicap ramp, I mean, is anybody building a handicap ramp that doesn't need one? I mean, so why are we regulating handicap ramps in the first place?
I agree with the
Let's
question.
Let them put the ramp in. And I mean, nobody puts a ramp in they don't need one. And if the need goes away, what's that hurting? Who is this ramp? Who is being harmed by the existence of this handicap ramp?
It's just a code definition that falls under the structure definition.
My suggestion to you is that it's perhaps it's something that doesn't need to be regulated because the vast majority of people are capable of regulating themselves, I think, when it comes to a handicap ramp, because who builds one that doesn't need one?
I think you make a good point, Mr. Wheatley. We do have that, you know, discussion when these things come up because there tends to be a lot of empathy to the applicant. The one concern, though, that we do see at the board level, though, is you also don't want things necessarily right on a property line where they could be right on your neighbor, where maybe you couldn't maintain that ramp while not trespassing on your neighbor or things like that. So I think from the county's perspective, that could conceivably be a reason why you might want to have some sort of oversight over it, much like we do with steps.
I don't know
that it needs to be a minimal regulation.
Right, and that's what we want to amend with this.
You said you could put a sidewalk in, right?
You can put a sidewalk in. It, you know, the sidewalk is, you're talking a grade level.
This actually falls under a structure and actually does require a building permit.
Because you're going up and much like you would with steps.
I don't see much difference between a sidewalk and a handicap ramp, except the ramp has a slope to it.
It only requires a permit because we say it does. We can say it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, that actually goes through building code that I have this planning office has no control over.
I'm just saying that, you know, the issue with regulating something is that maybe we need to think about, is this something that really needs regulating?
Yeah. And again, right now the intent is just to, because right now the way the code is written, they have to comply with setbacks.
I get it.
And we just want to make it as easy as possible so we don't actually have any issues.
Let it meet the building code requirement that it has to meet the handicap slope and safety requirements, but it doesn't have to meet the setback. It's no different than a sidewalk. That's all it is.
Because I can tell you I had one instance and the way it had been designed, it actually ended up in the right-of-way.
Yeah.
Which that, I mean, there's no way we could allow anything
Right-of-way is different than what we're discussing, though. I mean, you know, for the 99.9% of what we have out there, I mean, I just don't see why it should be regulated other than it should meet code as far as the structural integrity and the slope and all that.
Well, staff will circle back on this. Mm-hmm. I think there's I tend to agree with you. And we're trying to make it easier for these folks than what we have now. And perhaps there's a way that we can make it less burdensome. Also looking out and make sure there's not unintended consequences too as well, and that's always something that we
agree with Mr. Wheatley that people don't put them in just for the fun of it, you know, so they're not going to put in it just to say they have one.
I guess that would be my next question would be, well, what occurred that made this, are we regulating because of something we're afraid might happen, or are we regulating because we're fixing something that did happen?
Yeah, they're trying
it's
to
both.
Fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. We've had several go to the Board of Adjustment, and I've had several come in, and it's like when they originally came in and they talked to me, it was literally coming straight out and going straight to the property line. So it's like I worked with them to, like, how do we redesign it so it's not coming straight out but still getting them.
Or we've had some, and I can recall one that we recently had where there was a lady who passed away, and she had a handicap ramp on her property. It was not something that was initially caught, and then at the hearing we noticed it, and luckily we had advertised for what it was needed, so we were able to pull it in. But where it was a handicap ramp that had probably been there for 20 years, and they were selling the property, And because of that variance and some other encroachments, they weren't able to sell their property.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And I guess what I'm speaking to is not to what we're talking about today, but the fact that we're talking about it at all. Okay, I guess that's where I'm coming from, because I just don't think, I just think we're right. Look, as long as you're not building it on somebody else's property,
yeah,
it's a handicap ramp. I mean, you know, I mean.
Well, you're wanting deferral anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've heard the discussion.
Yep.
And we'll,
we can go back and rework
that.
Yeah, we're gonna defer action, maybe.
Anyone else, Mr. Rieger, you have a comment?
Going back to the handicap ramps, which I don't know, just for a simple permit or whatever, however it gets built. But when it did come up, it came up at the county council when they noticed that something was said about temporary. It's like throughout the code, what's temporary, what's non-temporary. So I think that that's part of the bigger issue than the ramp. But to get back to what Mr. Sharp had said, and with the Board of Adjustments, if you look at their last meeting on their schedule, they list everything. Everything is covered, front side year, or front side rear setbacks in there. See whatever we find on it. My opinion is if you're advertising something or somebody's coming in for something, they theoretically should know what they're coming in for. Not be, oh, well, we just found out for this now. Let's add it on because we put the side. That to me is false advertisement and not labeled. But like Mr. Sharp had said, what I was thinking too, is if you do watch Board of Adjustment, it's a total different animal than here, seems like. You go through it, a lot of this stuff, if Ms. Cromwell could just fix it with however you want to call it, for permission to have the permit to give the banks their thing to close it, but to get rid of something where somebody can take something and make a 20 by 30 foot deck and add a 5 foot ramp and say it's disability and get it right on their side. There may be somebody out there who would take advantage of it. Don't know if they do or don't. But it should be simpler than having to come in and get a variance just for a ramp, which is kind of silly. But the main thing out of it comes back to the code is temporary. And who makes the decision for the length on the time frame? And what is a pre-existing? I know this is a public hearing, but this is my example for what I'm going to bring up with different things too, and you've heard me come up with it, is the fences. I go into barbed wire. I have a thing where basically one permit comes in, approved for a 5 foot barbed wire fence in GR. Simple permit, done. Is that temporary or not temporary? Is it a permitted use or is there a temporary on it? Yet another one that comes in for another horse fence, which I have horses, I have four, I'm in the same boat. I just want to know whether I'm temporary or permanent. Forever, when the horses go, is going to keep my 4 foot fence out front. But one comes in for a variance through the Board of Adjustment. I'm scratching my head saying, why do you need a variance when it's a simple permitted by planning and zoning? It's like when you're looking at certain things and you tag all of them together, there's different things, what is allowed, not allowed. Somebody's disabled, handicapped, elderly, emergency, need a ramp. Just make sure it's safe. If it's just a sign, send out a spec, make sure it's just safe. That should be fine. That's for their own protection. So a neighbor or somebody comes over, builds it, doesn't build it correctly, they end up getting hurt worse. I mean, I didn't know nothing about the ramps. My main thing was mainly with this word, with temporary in it. You guys should all look in it. Use Control 115. It's a major thing to fix.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone on the commission have anything to add?
Yeah.
Okay.
The whole thing about the handicap ramp, nobody's going to build a ramp that they don't need it. And I think it's way, way, way overregulated.
I think we're in agreement there, Mr. Wheatley.
Sorry.
We're going to close the public hearing.
I've said enough.
We're going to close the public hearing, and I think Mr. Sharp is requesting a motion for deferral.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to defer action, ordinance 18-7, yards and open space ramps. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Our next ordinance is ordinance number 18-8. Off-street loading.
This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of County Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-182 and 115-183 and Table 1 relating to front, side, and rear yard. Sorry, I'm reading the wrong one.
You're on the wrong one. I was like, you're on 23.
I'm on the next one. Sorry. So this is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 28, Section 115-168 relating to modification of off-street loading requirements. Right now, the code says Planning Commission waive it, or you need a variance from the Board of Adjustment. We would like it just to make it waiver to the Planning Commission.
Yeah, I think it makes sense.
Get rid of the conflict in the code. Yeah. That's what we're trying to do.
Any changes, Mr. Sharp?
There were no recommended changes after staff looked at it.
Questions by the commission?
Nope.
Any member of the public have any interest in this particular item, ordinance number 18-8? Seeing no one rise, we're going to close the public hearing. Mr. Sharp, I guess we could just, Mrs. Stevenson, make a motion to recommend approval.
Would you let me read the title?
Yes.
Okay. Motion to recommend approval of ordinance number 18-8 and ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 23, Section 115-168 relating to modification of off-street loading requirements.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and second to recommend approval of ordinance 18-8, off-street loading. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. And our last ordinance to consider is ordinance number 18-9, setbacks for small, legally non-conforming lots.
So this is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-182 and 115-183 and Table 1 relating to front, side, and rear yard setbacks and small legal nonconforming lots. What we see a lot, we have a lot of small lots, 50 feet wide and smaller, that have to comply with normal setbacks. What we'd like to do is reduce those setbacks for the side yards to 5 feet, not allow any encroachments beyond that 5 feet, so anything would have to be at 5 feet. A change is what we'd like to do is do an average front yard setback instead of reducing the front yard setback, so it would be an average front yard setback. And I believe do that for the same for the rear yard setback. Just to help address, because we also see, the Board of Adjustment sees a lot of applications for lots that are 50 feet, 40 feet, there are even some 30-foot wide lots out in this county, and they're trying to build, you know, just a 24, 25-foot wide house on it. It makes it difficult to build on. So we would like to recognize that to reduce the need for the variances.
A lot of building done before 1970.
A lot of lots created prior to that.
Well, and there's also a lot, there's a significant amount of fee simple lots that were designed for mobile homes, manufactured homes, single wides typically. And in some of those cases, we've seen they can't get homes built of that size anymore that fits, as particularly to the width. It's not so much a length issue, but occasionally it is, to fit where that, you know, in that building envelope. So we did have some proposed changes to this as well. There were four that we have. I figure I'll let you know those.
Six.
I apologize. I forgot to turn my page. Thank you, Ms. Cornwell. Section 115-182E in the first line, we would replace pre-existing legally non-conforming lot with existing approved lot, because there may be some lots that actually were not necessarily pre-existing before our code, but are of that size. So we wanted to make sure we captured them. The same change would be made in Section 115-183D in the first line. And then in Section 115-182E, we would add a sentence at the end that says, provided, however, that no front yard setback shall be less than 5 feet. The reason for that is that there are certain communities that have front yard setbacks of 10 feet, mm-hmm. and we did not want to basically make it so that they didn't have any setback or have such a small front yard setback. Section 115-183D, we would also make a change that instead of it reading less than 50 feet of frontage, it would say 50 feet or less of frontage, because there's some lots that are 50 feet and we want to make sure we're capturing those. In Section 115-183D, we would propose to add a sentence at the end that reads, for any lot with side and rear setbacks reduced by operation of this section 115-183D. No structure shall extend or project closer than 5 feet to the lot line. There are some other provisions of the code that still allow for projections, things like chimneys or ornamental type things, window HVAC units. This would make sure that we're not allowing those to get closer than 5 feet as well. And then in the table at the end, revised note 16 to read, for any existing approved lot that is less than 10,000 square feet or that has 50 feet or less of frontage, the side yard setback shall be reduced to 5 feet. The front and rear yard setback shall be reduced by 5 feet. For any lot with side or rear setbacks reduced by operation of this section 115-183, no structures.
It should be by.
Gotcha. No structure shall extend or project closer than 5 feet to the lot line. 30. So.
Yeah. Any questions, Mr. Wheeler?
None.
Mr. Hudson?
No. Thank you.
Mr. Hobbs?
No.
Mr. Louis Stevenson? Any member of the public have any comments? Mr. Hutt?
Very quickly, and as Ms. Cornwell was reading that, it reminded me earlier that on a prior application, my daughter's comment, Lily's first comment was, wow, that lady reads fast. On this one, this is another one of the ones I would start at the outset and say it's much needed. While it's probably going to take work away from me, I appear in front of the board on a fairly regular basis for just these types of situations because, as was indicated, there are any number of lots that were obviously created before the zoning code existed, and I appear in front of the board on a fairly regular basis for just these types of situations. It certainly makes all the sense in the world for people not to have to appear in front of the board to do that and to try to meet a standard that is difficult to meet. And so it certainly makes all the sense in the world. The changes that I just looked at seemed appropriate and sort of mirrored some of the things that I had written down as my own notes. So I guess I'm just here in support of the proposed amendment.
Okay, and I encourage you to get a copy of the amended version and we'll accept these amendments and read that thoroughly before council gets to its public hearing. Mr. Rieger?
With them taking it from the 10-15 or whatever down to 5 feet on both sides, is that now going to give the Board of Adjustment the direction that we're making the concession down to 5 feet, going to call it a day, and then not have everybody start coming in for variances to go past the 5 feet?
These are just for non-conforming lots.
That's like the ones that come in where they don't have they removed the mobile home. They want to now come in, like a couple that you have been having come in, building a new lot, coming in. Now while they say, okay, I got 5 feet here, then they want to come in now for the AC unit on the side to get within the 5 feet again and say, now all I'm asking for is to put the air conditioner now, the AC unit or something, to go in between that 5 foot to the fence. Is the Board of Adjustment going to be leaning to say we're going to do it or no? We've set the new ordinance, we're bringing it in, it's cut and dry, it's favoring everybody going down the line.
This will not change the standards by which the board would review any variance application. What it would do is it would change what the setbacks are, and I think the idea there is we've had over 12,000 applications to the board, just from the commission's knowledge. And I think the idea there was that there's a lot of folks that have these small lots that have to apply, particularly with some of those 50 by 100 lots, and that this would potentially reduce the number of those because it would give them a little more room to build.
But as far as by automatically saying 10 foot to 5 foot or 15 feet in because of non-conforming, and coming in now to the 5, which seems to be where a lot of them end up anyway.
So your concern is to make sure that the 5 foot is 5 foot and that they can't come in get like the AC unit between the property line and that 5 foot?
Yes.
Okay.
You're meeting it, you're saying let's get rid of some of these so we don't have to have all these people come in and keep spending money when here's a simple set of plans. You have a 40 foot lot, you build it 40 foot, take 5 and 5, 30 foot, that's your jacket. Don't come in and say hardship because you own a 40 foot lot or 50 foot hardship. You want to go with a 30 foot house or 30-foot and a 40, and a 5-foot on each side. Now say you want the air conditioning, or you want an overhang going over, or you want to do that. So it's like with the neighbors coming in, this one complains about this one complains about that, coming in. Keep it simple. If the county is going to bend and make it uniform to get this in for planning and zoning, go with the 5 feet on each side and call it a day and let everybody build to the standards.
Yes,
thank you. May I have one more thing?
Sure.
And this is just to address with those standards, because sometimes I'm watching them saying to meet the 5 standards, what's the hardship not created by the applicant or not done with that? And some of them just don't seem to make sense, and it's just pushed through. It's just, okay, let's go. Thank you.
Good.
Well, one of the things that we had also looked at the staff level, Ms. Cornwell brought to my attention, was looking at average front yard setbacks or average setbacks in an area where you would take the setbacks of adjacent properties. Mm-hmm. We've done that with, there are certain ones that we can do that with now as an option as well, that we wanted to at least let you all know about as an option too.
Yeah, that way so if we say, you know, your front yard can't be more than, can't be less than 5 feet, and you're building at the 5-foot line, but everybody else is like 10 or 15 feet, then you really have something awkward. But if we do the average front yard, then everybody's kind of in line with a foot or two. So it looks more like a normal streetscape.
Okay. Anyone else want to comment from the public? Seeing no one rise, I'm going to close the public hearing. Mr. Sharp, did you have some recommended language?
I do. It might take me a little while, but I've got
okay.
It. Ordinance number 18-9, ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25, Section 115-182 and Section 115-183 and Table 1 relating to the front, side, and rear yard setbacks in small legally nonconforming lots with the following amendments. Section 115-182E in the first line replaced pre-existing legally nonconforming lot with existing approved lot. Section 115-182E add a sentence at the end that states, provided, however, that no front yard setback shall be less than 5 feet. Section 115-183D in the first line replace pre-existing legally nonconforming lot with existing approved lot. Section 115-183D change less than 50 feet of road frontage to 50 feet or less of frontage in the second line. Section 115-183D add a new sentence at the end, for any lot with side or rear yard setbacks reduced by operation of the Section 115-183D, no structure shall extend or project closer than 5 feet to the lot line. And in the Table 1, revised Note 16 to state, for any existing approved lot that is less than 10,000 square feet or that has 50 feet or less of frontage, the side yard setback shall be reduced to 5 feet. The front and rear yard setback shall be reduced by 5 feet. For any lot with a side or rear yard setbacks reduced by operation of this Section 115-183D, no structure shall extend or project closer than 5 feet to the lot line. Those amendments, Mr. Chairman, and there's a motion to recommend approval.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to recommend approval of Ordinance 18-9, setback for small legally nonconforming lots with amendments. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. That ends our public hearings. Our first item of other business.